There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcasts at DubaiEye1038.com.
The Bookshelf, Crime Edition.
So, spooky music there. So first up, we've got four books to get through, so let's get started. We're looking at Love Like Blood by Mark Billingham. Mark's been to the festival many times before. He's hugely popular, and he's had quite the varied career. Have a listen to this.
Having worked for some years as an actor and stand-up comedian, Mark Billingham is now one of the UK's most acclaimed and popular crime writers. His series of novels featuring Detective Inspector Tom Thorne has twice won him the Crime Novel of the Year award and was adapted for television. His debut novel, Sleepyhead, was chosen by the Sunday Times as one of the 100 books that had shaped the decade. His latest novel is Love Like Blood. A major new drama based on his masterful hit novels In the Dark and Time of Death was broadcast on the BBC in July last year. Billingham lives in London with his wife and two children, and he's currently hard at what is laughably called work, writing his next novel.
So, Daisy, Love Like Blood, it's part of a series, isn't it?
It is. Tom Thorne, D.I. Tom Thorne, maverick, not shy about going off-piste and annoying quite a lot of people. Love Like Blood, I'm going to say it right out, best one you've done so far, Mark. Corking, absolutely corking. Very, very delicate subject. We're looking at a murder, started off a murder of D.I. Nicola Tanner's partner, which is a horrific murder, which, Mark, you're brilliant at, obviously. But this D.I. Tanner is certain that an organised gang are offering murderous services to families who wish to dispose of errant relatives. And this tale just weaves its way round all sorts of twisty-turny corners. And funnily enough, for the first time, you see Tom Thorne actually towing the police party line and right. looking as if he's actually going to do what his superiors want him to do. But he's not. Of course he's not, because he's Tom Thorne. I loved this book. Some of the other Mark Billingham's I found, because I do like my crime to be slightly cosy, I have found them a little disturbing for my taste. Brilliantly written, but a little disturbing for my taste. This was on the money for me, and I absolutely loved it. And I might go back and read the other ones again, Mark, so we'll see. But a really cracking read for somebody who likes not just your crime procedural, but psychological thrillers as well, because it's got a little bit of both in there.
And I think it's quite a topical and sensitive issue, as you said earlier.
Very much so.
And I think, again, it's a book of fiction, so it's not true, but it definitely has sort of a strand running through it, which I think is of concern globally.
Very much so, very much. And in a previous life, I did have to deal with families who had these kind of issues. And also, I have to say, Mark, really, really well researched. And the characters of the community leaders were spot on, because I always used to find that there were a lot of people that put themselves up there as community leaders, but in no way did they have a voice that spoke for their whole community. And that's a thread through the book, that there's a lot of secrecy and there's a lot of people not saying things. And D.I. Tanner and Tom Thorne have to get through this wall of secrecy and this wall of silence. And the way it happens is really good. What I have to say is, when you get to the end of the book, and I'm not going to spoil it, but it's such a corkscrew, twisty-turny book that you actually end up right back at the beginning of the book again. Excellent. Absolutely brilliant. And I didn't expect that one.
I would agree. And I certainly agree with Daisy that I think this is the best one I've read by him. And yes, there are certainly times in his other books when I've had to turn my face away from the page or read it through screwed up eyes, he doesn't shy away from graphic description.
No, he does not.
This one, I think there probably is, but I think that the story just kept me going through it.
Absolutely. And the way that these killings are happening, actually, I think the people that are doing them, when you find out who is actually doing them, they fit the criminals. In some of Mark's other books, I've kind of thought, really, would they have done that? So maybe that's a lack of me as a reader, because I don't read psychological thrillers that often. But this was absolutely spot on. Yeah. And the people who are doing the killing, again, I won't spoil, but they have a brilliant relationship. And I think, Annabelle, you said that Mark does dialogue really, really well. That dialogue I loved. And the dialogue between Tom and his partner Helen and his best friend Phil, cracking, absolutely cracking. And you can hear them. You can hear them talking.
And you get to really know them, you know, as the books have gone on, as the series has gone on. I have read them all. You know, you become familiar with all the other people in his life, and you get to know and love them.
Yeah.
Mark Billingham is also doing a masterclass, isn't he?
Yeah.
I did one of his masterclasses years ago.
We have got some absolutely cracking workshops and masterclasses. Mm. So if you are listening to this show and you are someone who thinks that you'd like to try your hand at writing, or you're already a debut writer, don't miss some of the, you can find them all on the Emirates Litfest website, and there are some for young people as well. Yeah, I know that's almost, Ali Sparks has almost sold out. Yeah. That's been so popular.
That has sold out, but and I'm not sure how the Mark Billingham Masterclass is doing. But Tom Callahan, who's been to the festival as a writer, he got his first
line.
Book, from going to one of Mark's
He gave
classes.
Me the best bit of advice I've ever heard, and that's don't do your research when you're writing. And that was from the masterclass.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And that was 6-7 years ago, I can't remember.
Yes.
But he was very kind to me, and he was very generous with his advice, and I'm still using his advice.
Were we in the same masterclass? I think we were in the same masterclass and we didn't know each other.
Oh my goodness. Dun,
dun, dun. They are fascinating. You know, I'm going to put in a request from Yvette. To Yvette, please let me join one of these classes. I'm sure the answer is going to be no.
I'm not sure. I think you'll be too busy, and I'm not sure there are any tickets left. Can I just say, of course, that my first encounter with Mark Billingham was when he was playing the Artful Dodger in a school production in Birmingham circa 1980-something, 70-something.
My goodness.
I know. He recognised my accent. I really can't think how he knew I was from Birmingham.
No, I can't tell you.
We did a whole little and then we worked out that he was at Camp Hill School for Boys in, I think it was the Artful Dodger in Oliver.
Oh, wow. My goodness.
Spooky.
I'm going to have to sing it him down corridor or something now.
Daisy with the singing again.
I know. So it gets, I think, 10 out of 10 from our crime specialist.
Definitely.
One thing I want to say, crime thrillers are the best-selling genre of all fiction. Mm. Completely. And women are the overarching largest percentage buying crime.
What is it about
crime that you like it?
My poor husband, we're sitting in a coffee shop and I'm thinking about a scene that I'm writing or what have you. And he's sitting there and I'm talking about killing people. And people are looking at us and they're looking at him in askance, not at me. So what does that... I'm okay to talk about killing, but he's not right to talk about killing. So perhaps it's... I don't know. Everything's a murder weapon. Everyone's a victim. Mm. Everyone's a suspect. Mm. I'd like it.
I've got a question about Love Like Blood. So if I'm approaching this and not having read any of his other D.I. Tom Thorne ones, will I still enjoy it?
Definitely.
I think you would. Yeah.
Definitely.
In fact, I know that I have read the series out of order.
Right.
And I don't think that matters. I think that the characters... are well-formed, it's obvious who they are, and you get the context very quickly. So I don't think you need to go back to book one in the series.
Mark's really good at doing that. Sometimes I get a little bit annoyed when you've got a series, somebody writing a series, and you have to read the whole series, and you get to the end of one book, and you feel that you have to buy the next one. That's cheating. If you're an author, write the book, let people decide whether they really want to buy the next one. Don't make them feel as if they've been cheated if they don't, and he does that brilliantly.
I find conversations and discussions about authors who write crime fiction really interesting in terms of plot and structure, because you'd think, you know, you've got those two different camps of people. So you've got authors who plan before they write and authors who just kind of fly by the seat of their pants. Mm-hmm. And I would have thought that for crime, that's a genre where you can't really fly by the seat of your pants.
Yeah, you can. Oh,
people
you certainly
do
can.
Yeah. And I find that incredible. Here's Mark telling us about how that works for him.
I don't really, I'm not a big planner. I kind of try and come up with an opening. I have some kind of opening at the end of which there are lots of questions. Who are these people? Why are they doing these things? And they're questions I need to know the answer to. And if I need to know the answer to them, hopefully the reader will be engaged enough to want to know too and to keep turning the pages. There's no big plan. You know, I have a whiteboard at home that I put up in my office thinking it was going to be used for planning, and all it says is, get dressed, buy cheese, write novel. That's all it says.
Mark Billingham there. Get dressed, buy cheese, write novel. I like that list.
The Bookshelf, Crime Edition.
So we were just talking about Mark Billingham's Love Like Blood. We're talking about four books today on our crime bookshelf. Next up, we've got one by Anthony Horowitz. And it's a little bit of a different turn for him, isn't it? Because he's a character in his own book. How is that working?
It works brilliantly.
He does it every time, doesn't he? You
so
think you're getting
a
typical murder mystery kind of detective novel. And it's got all that in there. It's got your typical detective who's slightly flawed and complex. And then you've got this murder that's completely unsolvable. And then Mr. Horowitz goes and turns it on his head and you have no idea what's happening.
Now, Anthony Horowitz needs little introduction, but we're going to give him one anyway.
Super.
Anthony Horowitz is one of the most prolific and successful writers working in the UK, juggling writing over 40 books, creating and writing beloved TV series, films, plays, and journalism. Horowitz's bestsellers include the teen spy series Alex Rider. The latest book in the series, Never Say Die, was published last year and will be followed by a short story collection. A TV adaptation is also in the works. Horowitz is also an acclaimed writer for adults. He was commissioned by the Conan Doyle Estate to write two new Sherlock Holmes novels and by the Ian Fleming Estate to write a new James Bond novel. The sequel will be published this spring. In 2014, he was awarded an OBE for his services to literature.
Anthony Horowitz there, and we're talking about The Word is Murder, which is his latest crime fiction book. Now, I think this has one of the best openings of a crime fiction novel I've ever seen. Yeah. How does it start?
It starts with a woman who goes and plans her own funeral.
Dun, dun, dun. Dun, 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 dun.
And actually needs that particular procedure not very long after she leaves the undertakers.
It's just a brilliant way to start.
So many people do that though in UK.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
You know,
that's
part of the plan. You know, the Queen.
They've all been guides and scouts.
The Queen Mother and so on would have, always you plan your what hymns you want, where you want to be buried, what you want on your gravestone and so on and so forth.
But you don't normally expect to walk out and maybe need it.
And they need it almost immediately.
Every Third Thought by Robert McCrum.
True.
It is that you never know when it's going to come, so you should always be prepared.
Absolutely. Well, I'm not prepared at all. The furthest I've got is I'd like a wicker coffin, please.
Okay.
And by my graveside, I want a little pad, a little sensor pad, so that when people step on it, there's a little voice that comes over and says, I've been expecting you.
And then you have a few more dead bodies.
That's as far as I've got with my planning.
Okay.
Have you got a bit that you'd like to read out?
I have. And you said he's in the book. He's put himself in the book. And I think everybody in the studios had the privilege of meeting Mr. Horowitz. So he's got a lovely turn of phrase. He's got the most wonderful voice that I could listen to forever and ever and ever. So this was a real treat, because when I read it, I heard him speaking. So that was really good. So fairly near the beginning of the book, not too long after what Annabelle was talking about, he gets accosted by a fan at a signing, which authors do, and this is that sets him off on this particularly intriguing book that we're talking about. He says, I like writing fiction, I said, that's what I do. And the woman says, aren't you worried that your books might be considered irrelevant? I don't think they have to be real to be relevant, he answers. I'm sorry, I do like your work, but I disagree, says the fan. And I can almost see him frowning and thinking, I have to be really polite now. What's my answer? Perhaps it was true that I had spent too long living in my own imagination, that if I wasn't careful, I would lose touch. Maybe I already had. I haven't actually. Maybe a crash course in reality would do me good. So that's what kind of starts him off. And then he comes across this really obnoxious... he's been sacked, hasn't he?
Mm-hmm.
This policeman that's been sacked. And he thinks he's the bee's knees. He thinks he's the cat's pyjamas. He's been on television. He thinks he's rather special. But his television series has been cut, and he inveigles poor Anthony into a real-life crime investigation.
A Dr. Watson role,
Yes, he really doesn't like that at all, does he? He doesn't like Daniel Hawthorne, who's the policeman. But what did you think of Daniel Hawthorne? Did you really dislike him, Yvette, or did you have a little soft spot for him?
I quite disliked him. I'm not sure I did have a soft spot for him, actually. I'm not sure. No, I think it was... dislike was definitely the strongest emotion there.
Do you think you disliked him because Mr. Horowitz disliked him?
Probably.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because we really like Mr. Horowitz, don't we? Yes,
so,
we do.
Yeah,
we do.
And it's a very odd sensation reading the book, because as Daisy said, you can hear him in it. You can hear his voice if you've heard him speak. So it's a standalone. I don't know whether he's going to do another one.
I don't know.
I'd like to see number two in the series.
Yeah. But he always comes up with the most interesting concepts with writing crime novels, and you can't get bored with it.
Because The Magpie Murders had an interesting concept, didn't it?
It was a crime book within a crime book, that was kind of...
Again, that one I had to... I started reading The Magpie Murders, and then I had to go back and start again. So, hang on a minute.
Which book am I reading?
Now I'm understanding. I need to go back to the beginning.
Can I ask a question? Mm-hmm. What was the series of books that taught Anthony Horowitz to read?
Oh, I don't know.
Enid Blyton?
No.
C.S. Lewis?
You would know, Yvette. Anton B.
Again, those little books.
Yes, we're talking about the Anton B series.
I think it's on one of the tiny books.
One of the little books I've got, which is obviously not the original ones, but they go on and on. You know, Anton B. Travel the World, or Anton B. Have a birthday or whatever. And it's, you know, he said, you know, these were the books that where I learnt to read.
Got him into reading.
I thought you were going to say Anton Deck for a minute.
No, Anton Deck. I love that. It's such an old-fashioned...
This is a historical show, remember?
Yeah, this is such an old-fashioned series. But my goodness, my grandchildren absolutely love it. Yeah. You know, they know because the words that they should recognise are in red. And so you turn the page and once they've read it two or three times, they know what the word is. And it's just the drawings are so old-fashioned but lovely.
Absolutely.
So that's Anthony Horowitz's that got him reading.
The way he brought in he's not an inspector because he's been fired.
He has. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So we call him Hawthorne, but he hasn't got a title at all because he's just Hawthorne. He's a sort of consultant, isn't he?
Yes, he does kind of still go back into the police and do some work for them, but I think it's on the low level. They don't really want everybody to know that he's come back. He's a really good detective.
But dislikable. You didn't like him.
Well, I didn't utterly dislike him. I felt that he probably isn't somebody that fits in well with anything because he's so focused on solving crimes and just doing his job. So I think he comes over as being really unlikable because he's not very socially acceptable and he's not very nice to Mr. Horowitz, which kind of made me dislike him. But I did think, again, brilliant. Anthony Horowitz, brilliant writing, complex characters, but you don't think you're reading a complex character, you just think you're reading somebody dislikable. But when you really have to sit down and think about it, which I read this about 4 or 5 months ago, so I was kind of looking back into it, and when you have to review something, you can maybe look at it a little more in a tighter focus, don't you? And that's when I kind of thought, well, maybe I shouldn't dislike him as much as I did when I read it, because I was reading it because Mr. Horowitz didn't like him and he was quite brusque with him, that maybe there was something behind that. And Mr. Horowitz is very, very clever at doing that. A bit like an ABBA song, when you think it's really, really simple, but when you try and pick it apart, it's really, really complex.
I like the way he references literary festivals as well. So the turning point when he decides that he will actually do what Hawthorne has asked him to. So he's at Lit Fest, and he talks about going to Lit Fest and having the audiences and the questions you get, and they're always the same. Where do your ideas come from? Where are my favourite characters? How long does it take to write a book? And then the question he's asked is, why do you always write fantasy? Why don't you write anything real? Mm-hmm. So he takes umbrage at this, and it talks about his TV series Foyle's War, and says, that's based on true stories. And then he sort of starts thinking, is that the case? So he actually then goes back to the proposal Hawthorne has given him, which would be to write something absolutely real because it's happening. And that's what makes him decide to do it. I do wonder whether that was a question he got at one point. And that's, that was the actual inspiration.
I'm going to ask him.
I thought when Daisy, when you were reading that you were about to say, I was the person that asked that question.
Oh, wouldn't I have loved to have been? I would have been that quick off the mark. No, I'm always one of those people that 20 minutes after I should have said something, I think about the thing that I should have said. So, no, it wouldn't have been
Let's
me.
Hope it doesn't happen now.
No. I will take him to task because he doesn't mention Dubai in his literary festival. I do have to say.
I kept waiting for it and waiting for it. And he talks
about maybe
loads,
in the next book.
He's touched on Dubai before, but...
What I did think he did very well was the character characterisation of Hawthorne, because perhaps slightly naively, but I kept thinking, well, if Horowitz is real, maybe there is somebody like Hawthorne in his life, because because the job he was doing was basically when he did his whenever he had like a crime series on television or in books, like the Hawthorne would be the guy who would say, right, this is right, this is wrong, consultant. This wouldn't happen. Yeah. Exactly. So I do wonder who these people are that Horowitz consults with, and maybe that's something that I would ask him at the festival.
I think we need
him here. Get him on the phone quickly. He's in Jaipur. Just give him a quick
just
bell.
Ring him up.
Yeah, just
me
give him a quick
Horowitz.
Bell. Yeah. And don't call him Tony.
Or Aunt.
I wouldn't call him Tony. Because that's in the book, isn't it? He doesn't like Tony.
Again, this whole thing with Hawthorne.
That's very him, though.
It is. Yeah. Completely.
You can see him. You can almost see his facial expressions and all that kind of... It's a very good take and a very unusual take. And actually, I'm thinking there aren't very many authors, crime authors, who could have done that and done it well.
Yeah, good point.
I think he's probably one of maybe two or three that I would think I could read that and believe it and have those questions in my mind. Is this real? Is it not real? Is it part of his fantasy? Is it what have you? But yeah, he's one of the ones, and well done, Mr. Horowitz.
Because when I read the blurb for this, I thought exactly the same thing. I thought, how on earth is he going to make this work and me not go, like, roll my eyes at it? But from the first page, you're like, okay, I'm sold.
Yeah.
Well done.
Exactly.
You win all the book prizes.
Yes.
Definitely.
Yes. Hats off to you. But yes, you've got a lot of questions coming, Mr. Horowitz, so brace yourself.
That's just from the Litfest.
Yeah, brace yourself, Brenda. We're coming in.
Speaking of questions, but before we head off and put our daggers back on the bookshelf momentarily, what would you ask him at the festival, Yvette?
Me, I'd certainly ask him how did you get the inspiration? Was that a real question? At a lit fest, why do you always write fantasy? That would be my number one question. Did that actually inspire you to write the book?
It'd be really funny if it happened here.
And I'd quite like to know if there's another book in the pipeline with those characters.
Well, there you go. That's our chat about The Word is Murder by Anthony Horowitz. The next book on the crime shelf, A Photo on a Mobile Phone Changes Everything.
The Bookshelf, Crime Edition.
So we've talked about Mark Billingham's Love Like Blood, Anthony Horowitz's The Word is Murder. Next up, we've got Peter James' latest, Need You Dead. Here's a little bit about Peter James.
Peter James is one of the UK's most treasured crime and thriller novelists. His Roy Grace detective novels have sold over 80 million copies worldwide. His first non-fiction title, Death Comes Knocking, was published in 2016. Three of James's books have been adapted as critically acclaimed plays. He's also produced numerous films, including The Merchant of Venice, starring Al Pacino. He was chair of the Crime Writers Association twice and won the Diamond Dagger Award for sustained excellence 2 years ago. James was also voted by Smith readers as the best crime author of all time. Born and brought up in Brighton, he divides his time between his homes in Sussex and Notting Hill in London.
So there you go. There's a little bit of information about Peter James, who doesn't really need an introduction because he's got so many fans. So many, in fact, he's actually won an award recently. Did you hear about this?
Tell us.
So basically, Peter James and Philippa Gregory have won a rather interesting award. So it was the Specsavers Awards recently. So Peter James and Philippa Gregory received honorary platinum awards, acknowledging the millions of copies they have sold across several titles. So Andrew Holgate of the Sunday Times introduced the honorary platinum section, endorsing the awards in recognition of the authoritative status of the Specsavers bestseller list. So platinum award, it sounds a little bit like, what does this mean? Basically, it means they've sold 1 million copies and over, which is a substantial number of books.
It's quite a lot. You've got gold is half a million, and silver's 250,000. So yeah, it's quite impressive.
It is very impressive. So well done, Peter James. Now, the book that's just come out was released, I think, in July last year, summer last year, 2017. And if I just read you the first bit of the blurb, Lorna Belling, desperate to escape the marriage from hell, falls for the charms of a man who promises her the earth. But as Lorna soon finds, life seldom follows the plans you've made. A chance photograph on a client's mobile phone changes everything for her. What a great way to make you want to pick up a book.
Yeah. And his detective is based on a real life detective, isn't it?
Yeah.
Who many years ago, when he started writing his crime, he lives in Brighton, he managed to get Brighton Police to include him when they were going off on their you know, emergency calls, and he became very close with one of the detectives who always reads the proofs and sort of points out if something is not authentic or is not how it would have happened. And I think that's why his crime books are so readable, because even though you have to keep telling yourself this is fiction, it's not really happening, it is so real.
It is, isn't it? Mm. And, you know, Peter James, how dependable is he to write a cracking crime novel? I actually think if we had this conversation in 50 years' time, we would still be talking about Peter James, because he is the, you know, like the Conan Doyle, the Christie of our time. Mm. He is prolific, obviously. And sometimes when you have a prolific crime writer, you get a little bit bored of the same thing happening. Doesn't happen to me with Peter James.
No,
he delivers absolutely every single time, and he does with this, Need You Dead. One brilliant title, Need You Dead.
And they all have dead in the title way, don't they?
It's just brilliant.
One thing I wanted to ask you was, I saw in an interview Peter had said that usually he doesn't write this type of book. This is kind of a first for him, apparently, because it's a whodunit. Agatha Christie style is what he was going for, because usually he writes cat and mouse, where you know who did it.
Yeah,
but there's a little bit of that in here.
There's definitely a recognisable Peter James in here. It it doesn't detract. But I think Yvette and I were saying before, there are so many suspects in this book. It's drowning. It's an embarrassment of suspects. Yeah. If that's
and every time one pops up, you think, that's him.
And they're so beautifully orchestrated. The evidence, you know, the motive, who did it? Did they have the opportunity? Did they have the? It's all in there. So every single time one of these comes up, and some of them, I'm not going to give it away, but some of them, you think, yeah, of course he would. That or of course she would. They would do it. They would do that. You're right, Isabel. There's a humanity in Roy Grace that rarely comes across in other detectives. We talk about complex detective, British crime detective. They always have to have something slightly wrong with them. In this one, it's not slightly wrong with them, but obviously he's found a son that he never knew he had from his estranged and disappeared wife, Sandy. So that runs through the whole book. But with the suspects in this, with all this going on in the back of his mind, or this familial stuff going on in the back of his mind, every suspect, he really guns for them. He tries to find out everything he can. He's an ace detective, super, super, super detective. But there are some suspects in here that he doesn't want to investigate, and he doesn't want to think
that
they could be capable. Mm. And it's not that he doesn't want to investigate them, but he doesn't want to think that they were capable of doing this. And that's where this humanity comes across and very much how he writes this particular character.
Yeah. And I think the detective who he always mentions in his sort of when he puts his thanks at the end of the book, I think that has really meant that his books are never formulaic. You really don't know what's going to happen. And the characters are so real and believable, because a lot of it will be based on
real stuff.
On real stuff, and obviously, but in a fictional way. And this wonderful detective is there to sort of read through and point out where things are not authentic.
And he includes the glossary at the back, so that that's
police
brilliant. It's all up to date. It's authentic and it's accurate. What I really like about the series, aside from the whole detective thing, is the story with his first wife. Very first book, you know that his wife has gone missing. And that's a sort of just almost an aside in the book, and maybe, you know, helps to define some of his character and so on. Then as you keep reading the series, I got to the point where I'm just like, and his wife, because you get a little bit, you know, she's been sighted somewhere else in the world. All these little bits of story, they're digging up his garden, because at one point they think he's actually murdered her. So this happens throughout the books. And I certainly got to the point for me where I'm reading the series and just like, come on, what's going to happen next?
What's happened to Sandy?
So Sandy assumes a bigger role in each book, I think.
She does.
And then obviously in this one, where he's actually discovered what happened, he's discovered the story, and he discovers that he's got a son.
But that doesn't end it, does it? I still want to have the next book to find out what influence Sandy is still going to have, because I don't think she's going to disappear.
Definitely not.
No, I don't think she's at all.
That's a brilliant example of this book working for long-time fans of the series, but also for a new reader.
And you always, in some sort of strange smug way. If you've read the whole series, you sort of you know you've got
oh,
all that in
looking
your head.
Really smug now.
Yeah,
smuggest of smug.
I do a good smug face. Mm. Happens a lot. Mm. Well, I thought that. I did think that.
I did see that coming.
Yeah. Well, I didn't like to say.
So that's Peter James, Need You Dead. Now we're going to move on to an author whose debut kind of rocked the world a bit, didn't it? What was the debut novel called?
The Couple Next Door. It's an all-night read by Shari LaPenna, and she's still in the top best-selling books in UK.
Indeed. She's just got a Specsavers Award.
Yes.
Indeed, yeah, gold. 500,000 copies.
Yes.
Wow, pretty incredible.
Her debut novel is pretty good, and she's a lawyer. In her real life when she's not writing, but she wrote this book and it was just absolutely, I could not put it down, and I recommend it to people, and they were really annoyed because they were meant to be doing work or things like that and they had to stop and once they read this book.
These for me are her books are the ones that I have to read at a sitting.
Yes.
And I can't go to sleep, so I never start one.
So this one's called A Stranger in the House.
That's the second one.
Which is the one that we're talking about now, and I'd class this as an amnesia thriller.
Amnesia thriller.
I've never heard that.
No. We were just like, really? Okay.
It's
absolutely described perfectly.
Yeah,
it does. Well, it is. Yeah.
But it's all about the
psychological
characters.
Thriller,
it's psychological.
Yeah.
Again, we have this seemingly ordinary sort of community. And then something
Which
happens.
Is anything but.
Yes, anything but.
I love books that start off with it's kind of like the wisteria kind of on the door and the picket fences and all the rest of it. Because you
Absolutely.
Think, I am in for a treat because everything bad happens in places like that.
Yeah, like Miss Marple.
Exactly.
You know, the little village, cricket.
Exactly.
Desperate Housewives.
I haven't read her first book. Mm. This is the first time I've picked this up. And I did read this in one sitting.
Yes.
And I could not put it down. Just the elegance of her writing, for a start. It's almost naive. Mm. It's almost like there's no wordy gymnastics in there. She doesn't need to.
No. It's a cracking good story.
It's an absolutely cracking good story. The one thing I liked was, we talked about disliking Daniel Hawthorne. By about page 30 or 40, I disliked everybody. She's really good at writing these characters where you want to see what they're going to do next because you want them to fall down. You want them to be discovered. Yeah.
They're not likable.
No.
And even in a Couple Next Door, you feel sympathy for the wife, and sympathy for the husband, but you know, maybe it's misplaced sympathy as things go on, and you're trying to the problem is that you really get drawn in because they are believable. You think, oh my goodness, imagine if I was in her shoes, or imagine that happened. And A Couple Next Door was horrifying to read because I think it was in a way every parent's worst nightmare.
Completely.
It's all the kind of fly on the wall thing. I found the detectives, Rasbach and Fleming, were almost in the background, and I was almost the detective.
Yes. Yeah.
And I was getting this snoop into these kind of perfect people's lives behind the doors and obviously in the minds and what they're thinking and what they're doing and what they're trying to cover up. And I love that because you were talking earlier on in the program about body language. And I did a course a couple of years ago on reading body language as part of my degree in psychology. And it is so, so interesting. So I do watch people. I'm a terrible people watcher. When I'm supposed to be writing or doing something else, I'm sitting there watching people. I say it's research, but it's not. But this is the equivalent of a book people watching because you're just
extreme
there.
People watching.
Exactly, you're there and you're, I mean, Bridget Cruikshank, the opposite.
Oh, great name.
Oh, exactly, Bridget Cruikshank. Knitter extraordinaire. Is she what she says she is? Is she who she kind of makes people believe that she is? And you get through the book and you immediately think, of course it's not, because you know what the book is about. You know it's about people hiding themselves and what you can get to find out about them. Bridget, for me, was actually one of my favourite characters. Mm. Because
she's absolutely brilliant. I agree. And it's that voyeuristic instinct, yes, as a reader. Yeah. Yeah. Do you know what's really exciting?
What's
Can
up?
I just say that Cheryl Lapena, Peter James, Anthony Horowitz, Mark Millingham are all going to be here in March.
No
and
way.
If you go on to www.emirateslitfest.com, you can buy tickets, go to the sessions and ask them all the burning questions.
And yeah, buy these books.
And get them signed.
Yes. Daisy, yeah, would you mind recapping the names of the books and the authors?
Right, okay. There's Sherry Lapena, A Stranger in the House. Cracking read. Peter James, Need You Dead. Never disappointing. Oh, the wonderful Mr. Anthony Horowitz, The Word is Murder. Again, never disappoints, but always a little bit quirky. And Mark Billingham, Your Best Yet, Sir. Love Like Blood.
Mm. So there you go. The crime scene tape is up and staying up, I'm afraid. The bookshelf is closed.
There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcasts at DubaiEye1038.com.